Okay, you've selected to continue on the accessible route. And what a wonderful and evocative place Quarrybank House Garden is. So completely full of contrasts. On the one hand, you have the river and valley with the natural landscape triumphing. Yet in stark contrast is the source of the money that funded this romanticised landscape, the mill itself. This is what makes Quarrybank House Garden one of the best examples of a picturesque garden we have in this country. The picturesque movement was a reaction against what was seen as the blandness of designs by people like Capability Brown and Humphrey Repton. Their parkland settings with manicured lawns running down to serpentine lakes was nature constrained. The picturesque, on the other hand, was inspired by the work of landscape painters such as Claude Lorraine. In these gardens, in gardens such as the one here at Quarrybank, vistas and perspectives draw the eye to distant horizons, and all around is nature in its untamed glory. In the foreground would be points of interest to charm the imagination, a folly, a thatched cottage. Wealthier owners might run to the remains of a ruined abbey, built specially to enhance that part of the view. Caves and grottos were popular, as in this garden, and owners would advertise in the Gentleman's Magazine for a hermit to live in their picturesque grotto. The man who, more than any other, popularised the fashion for the picturesque was an artist and clergyman from Cumberland called William Gilpin. In the second half of the 18th century, he toured the country, recording examples of the textures and composition of picturesque scenes, which he eventually published. If ever you've tried to capture the cottage garden look of riotous colour and rampant planting, you may not have realised it, but you were liberating a bit of the picturesque. There was no famous designer here at Quarrybank. However, we do know that Hannah Gregg herself played a pivotal role in the creation of the garden and was very much in touch with garden fashions of her time. David Seckers explains.
She was in touch with all these cultivated people who had an international interest in the world of plants, whether they're vegetables or ornamental plants. And they were coming into gardens at that time. She was in touch with those people. So I think the garden would have been, first of all, very romantic. Secondly, very well cultivated with interesting varieties, some of them quite new to the introductions in Britain.
As for how the garden developed during those early years, we know the vision for it had been fully realised by the time the naturalist James Audubon visited here in 1826. In his considered opinion, he described it as
truly picturesque and cultivated to the greatest possible extent.
What needs to be remembered is that the garden was born at a time when the rapidly developing industrial world was considered new and exciting. It was only for later generations that industry had more negative connotations, especially as it became increasingly noisy and dirty. This led wealthy industrialists to move away from their factories and sources of wealth. Indeed, the Greggs complained of soot on their roses after the introduction of steam power at the beginning of the 19th century. And the future Prime Minister, William Gladstone's recorded opinion of Quarrybank House in 1821 was,
were it not for the noise and smell of the cotton factory, the residence would appear an extremely pleasant one.
Robert Hyde Gregg followed the trend, and around 1830 he built himself a new house, half a mile away, called Norcliffe Hall, although his parents and sisters remained here at Quarrybank. So let's get going. Looking back towards the garden, you'll see three pathways. We're going to take the middle path. Up ahead, you'll come to a fork in the path. Turn right when you arrive at the fork, and stop just beyond it. If you look up to your left, you should get a great view of the cliff. The red sandstone cliff you can see has been the subject of many studies over the years because it vividly